Welcome, everyone, to a special draft recap edition of the NBA podcast. My name is Brian Tepork. I am joined today by my usual co-host, Morten Jensen, along with B-Ball Breakdown draft expert, Jeff Fair. How's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Yeah. Well, outside of the Brexit thing, Brian, I'm doing pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah, so Morten is in Copenhagen. He lives in Denmark, so you can blame him on Twitter for the global economic meltdown that is happening.
That's unfair. This is the Brits, man.
Good point. Take your aggression out on Mark Deeks. So, ignoring the catastrophe that is happening in the world, we are here to talk about the NBA draft, which happened last night. It pretty much went as expected, at least in the first two picks. Ben Simmons went to the Sixers at number one. Brandon Ingram went to the Lakers at number two. And then things went to hell pretty quickly. As Jeff and I talked about leading up to the draft, the Celtics were really the fulcrum at three. There was a lot of talk about whether they would trade the pick, keep the pick, who they would take if they kept it. And as we were getting closer and closer to the draft, it seemed like my Sixers and your guys' Bulls were in a bidding war with the Celtics at number three. Turned out that, according to ESPN's Mark Stein, the Sixers offered Nerlens Noel both of their late first-round picks and Robert Covington to the Celtics, but they were hot after Jimmy Butler. So, guys, I mean, you're the Bulls fans here. Did you want to see Jimmy go last night, and what would you have wanted in return?
Well, okay, so let's just clarify this in a way that everyone understands. Basically, Philly wanted Boston, Boston wanted Chicago. That's like the classical love triangle in grade school, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I actually, like, if I wanted to move Butler, and here's the thing, I mean, I would have preferred to put on the full rebuild, meaning that trading Butler, but I would have wanted a very, very strong package for it. For Boston specifically, I would have wanted number three, Amir Johnson for salary purposes, number 16, 23, and the pick swap in 2017. That's not like that. That's where I would start my negotiation. I could have survived if the number 23 pick had been removed, mm-hmm. but at a bare minimum for me, number three, number 16, the 2017 pick swap, and Amir Johnson. That's like the bare absolute minimum for me, and I actually think that mm-hmm. would have been a great deal. And I'm just going to include our very own Snotty Drippin here, because I had a chat with him prior to the draft, and James was like, you can have all the picks. I just want Jimmy. Which was like, that was like making sweet love with me when he said those words. That was amazing, because that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted all the damn picks. Apparently, the Bulls did not find common ground with Boston. I think Casey Johnston from the Chicago Tribune even put up a tweet saying that the Celtics have a tradition of wanting to win trades, so they really stuck it to the Bulls, mm-hmm. and that's why no trade was made. So yeah, that's what I would have taken for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, what about you, Jeff?
I'm along the same line as Morten. It starts with that. Obviously getting the number three, but it's that 2017 Brooklyn pick. It's it's going to be extremely valuable. It's a better draft. The Brooklyn is, I mean, Brooklyn has no one
right
outside Brook Lopez. So you kind of know where that's going to be. But I think it all started with those two picks. And then getting, whether it's, you know, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and Jay Crowder, none of those guys are going to move the needle as far as a rebuild goes. But at least they're young, useful, cost-controlled assets that you can have a semi-decent team around. But I was all for trading Jimmy Butler, but it was, like Morten said, it really had to be for the absolute right package. So if Boston was going to get him, it was going to be the number three plus next year's number one, plus, you know, a few more picks and then maybe one or two cost-controlled players. But, you know, I for all the grief that we give Gar Foreman, rightly deserved. I like the fact he's kind of slow playing it now. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to settle for a halfway decent offer. And I think that's Danny Ainge wanting to win a trade is ridiculous at this point, because they need to make some kind of bold move in order to thrust them up atop the East. Otherwise, they're going to be stuck with, you know, 25 guys in their roster with no one that can carry the weight of the other guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And if they, I mean, there are a couple things with Boston, especially. You know, they reportedly offered the 4 first-round picks last year for number 9, which was going to be, they would use it on Justice Winslow, but it turned out to be Frank Kaminsky. So they're working from a position where, like, everyone knows they're desperate. It's the same thing that's going on with the Sixers trading one of their big men. Like, their value is depreciated because everyone knows they are hunting for a star. So I'm with you guys. Like, Danny Ainge needs to just bend over and take it. He needs to just say, like, I'm not going to win this trade. Like, I'm going to have to consolidate a bunch of assets, and I'm going to lose value, but I'm going to get the superstar that I need to actually move into that realm of, like, a real title contender.
And here's the thing. He screwed himself by actually taking Jaylen Brown over Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
Because at least if he had taken Chris Dunn, you could have had, like, later conversations with the Bulls over the course of the summer.
Right.
But he took Jaylen Brown and 2 draft and stash players. Like, right now, there is no incentive for the Bulls to pursuing that deal. Of course, outside of the fact that they won the 2017 pick swap. But, like, they wanted Chris Dunn. That was their guy. That was the guy they had at the very top of their draft board, ignoring, of course, Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. And if he's not in play, then that lowers their interest dramatically, meaning Danny Ainge just dug himself a hole.
Yeah, and I mean, if they were just going to piss away their first-round picks anyway, like, why not just get rid of them, right? Like, I like what they did in the second round more than I like what they did in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. And I still don't even like what they did in the second round because they traded Deonta Davis and then Rade Zagarac for a lottery-protected 2019 Clippers pick, which probably, you know, depending on what you think happens to the Clippers over the next couple of years, that's either going to be in the, like, mid to late 20s, or they're just not going to get it. It's going to turn into a second rounder. Like, it was just, if Deonta Davis falls to 31, that dude was, like, a top 10 prospect on most boards. Jeff, I don't remember exactly where you had him in your college-only big board, but I feel like it was in the 10 to 12 range, somewhere around there.
It was top 15, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was shocked that he dropped. You know, he didn't get a lot of playing time his freshman year. And I think it's the same issue that Scal had a little bit as he dropped, that, you know, these freshmen come in and they don't get, I think we talked about it in the draft podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of playing time their freshman year. And I think teams are becoming, I don't want to say smarter, but they want to get more tape on these guys to see what they can do. And they just didn't have that with Deonta Davis because he just, and like Cheick Diallo too. That's another guy.
Yeah.
Who dropped a little farther than probably his skill level would indicate. But back on Jaylen Brown, I mean, the funny thing is, too, and you mentioned it with just taking Chris Dunn, Jaylen Brown makes no sense on their roster right now. He just he doesn't. I think at least if you take Chris Dunn, you have some interesting trade chips in Isaiah in with him, and then you have Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, so you're dealing from a strength. Well, adding Jaylen Brown, they needed shooting. Jaylen Brown's one weakness is shooting. They have Avery Bradley and you know, R.J. Hunter, who can hit outside shots right now, and they don't play R.J. Hunter. So it was very, very interesting to see that they took Jaylen Brown there, because at least with Chris Dunn, you're then stockpiling at the same position that you can deal from. And then if you take another guy, like if you take a guy like Dragon Bender or someone up front where there is a weakness, then you're adding to the team. So this made sense on no levels to me.
Yeah, you could even like say that regarding Jaylen Brown, he's a good defender, so he fits into like the makeup of Boston. Mm-hmm. But even that excuse doesn't work because Chris Dunn is a good defender himself. So like there's no way Boston can spin this to anything that makes even a remote makes, I'm just going to redo like that last part, Brian. Yep. There isn't any way Boston can spin this into making remotely sense, basically. I mean, Chris Dunn is just the better overall prospect. He offensively, he projects to be a lot better. And while there was a shooting knock on him, 37% from deep still beats the 29%, I think, Jaylen Brown shot last year. I mean, it's, wow, Boston, man. I get why Snoddy got upset.
Yeah.
In our internal thread, he compared the Celtics to a gingerbread house, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Filled with rats. A rotting gingerbread house. I think you can find it on his. I'm sure he tweeted it or put it on Facebook. So check.
He definitely put it on Facebook.
Yeah,
because I was reading it last night. But the luxury that you should have when you acquire all these first round picks. The point of getting all these first round picks is so that you don't have to win every trade.
Right.
They're there as additional assets that you can use to augment any deal that you're proposing. So you don't have to give up more of your core. I mean, you have a ton of additional picks, and they are certainly valuable to teams that are looking to rebuild.
Yeah.
So his want, Danny Ainge's want to win every trade is a little disconcerting to me. I mean, they had a chance to make a big move, and you know, if you add Butler to Isaiah Thomas. And you know whoever else they kept, whether it was Avery, I mean, they would have kept Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, at least some combination of those guys. I mean, you have something interesting then.
Yeah, and we saw with the Minnesota Timberwolves took Chris Dunn at number 5, and then we saw apparently Chicago and Philly started a bidding war for him. Like an AP reporter, I'm not even going to bother trying to say his last name, said that Philly was offering the same package at 3. At 5 that they did to Boston at 3. He didn't add specifics, but we can assume that's the same Covington, Noel, and the two late first-round pick. I think that's what he was referring to. And then Boston and Minnesota, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, where, you know, at least through the lottery, we're in, like, legit talks to go for Dunn. Can you guys believe if it was really just Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, and Minnesota turned that down? There's no way, right?
So here's the thing. I made a tweet that got the attention of a lot of Wolves fans because at the time the rumor was Zach LaVine and 5 for Jimmy, and I said no way. Here's the deal. You go Wiggins and 5 for Butler. Otherwise, there's no dice. And Wolves fans came at me big time, and I get why. Yeah. I get why. But they also have to appreciate the fact that the Bulls shouldn't just give up something of tremendous value just because. So it was a no-win situation. Like, the Wolves are never going to give up Andrew Wiggins with a pick, or maybe not even Wiggins himself for Butler.
Right.
And the Bulls are not going to give up Butler for just Zach LaVine and 5. And even if you throw in Gorgui Dieng, you know, no dice. So this was just a bad trading partner.
Yeah.
And I think both teams realized it. Like, they probably spun the ball around a little bit, came up with different names, and they realized, you know, this doesn't make sense. Nope, it doesn't. And so be it. But, man, that was the highlight of my evening. The amount of puns and jokes that came from tips basically holding Chris Dunn hostage for a few minutes. That was, wow, that was some great fun, man.
Yeah, it was pretty
I want to hear those tapes of the trade conversation, if there was any. Man. Even though Gar says that was the most ridiculous thing of the night, I think, is that you had multiple, you know, people I consider high level reporters saying that there was dealings going on with the Timberwolves, and then Gar Foreman to come out and say, "Oh no, we had absolutely no discussion tonight about Butler. We didn't think about it. He's a member of our team." Well, that's a flat out lie. Unless you're, I mean, there's either all these reporters lying to us or Gar Foreman lying.
Yeah.
It's, I'll tell you who I trust more.
Exactly, right?
Wick, I don't know how you say his first name, but Wick Grousbeck, the Celtics co-owners, played the same card. He was like, we were nowhere even close to trading number 3.
Yep.
We're not going to get ripped off. Like, okay, shut up. Like, just, you were clearly in discussions a lot to trade number 3. But let's turn our attention to the other big trade of the night. OKC shipped Serge Ibaka to Orlando for Victor Oladipo, Ersan Ilyasova, who has a very lightly guaranteed contract, but it sounds like they're going to keep him, and the number 11 pick, your boy Jeff Sabonis.
I can't tell you how much I love this deal. And it's not just for Sabonis. It's, okay, bringing Oladipo in essentially means that they're not going to throw big money at Deion Waiters, which is extremely important. I think a guard rotation of Westbrook, Andre Roberson to play that D position that you saw him kind of excel at in the playoffs, and then Oladipo to be that, you know, if they run a 2-point guard offense and be that bench scorer, if that's indeed how they are going to proceed, is much stronger than having waiters there worried about whether or not he's going to go off for a 1-for-20 night or, you know. But I think it's an interesting way to proceed because they're essentially getting rid of that, you know, the third core part to bring in three, you know, players that can join the rotation, and they're really building the bottom of the roster, and developing the bottom of the roster to show Kevin Durant. It seems like that they're going to have sustainable success for the duration of his career.
Yeah,
it's not going to be, and Ibaka's a free agent after next year too.
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest thing.
Right.
There's a lot of pieces at play there that I really like the deal for the Thunder. And in some respects, I like it for the Magic, but I mean, I think they giving up on Oladipo. I'm a big Oladipo fan, and a big Sabonis fan. I think I commented last night. I mean, Steven Adams and Sabonis up front are basically going to be lead blockers for Westbrook and Durant on the way to their hoop. I mean, they're going to rebound. They're going to be tough down low, and it's going to be formidable. So I really like this deal for the Thunder.
Yeah. What about you, Mort?
Remember that scene in Dumb and Dumber where Harry and Lloyd part ways a little bit, and then Harry goes, "Just when I thought you couldn't get any dumber, you go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself." That's Sam Presti right now.
Yeah,
he pulled out like the best trade he's pulled out maybe ever for his standard. I mean, that's, man, that was good. Like Sabonis, I'm equally as high on him as Jeff is. I absolutely love him. Not as high on Oladipo as Jeff, I think, but still, I like the guy, and I think he's got a lot more potential than what he's shown.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, Oklahoma City wins this deal hands down. But I do think that people are crapping unnecessarily on the Magic because they're using a flawed argument. They're saying that Serge Ibaka has declined in recent years.
Yeah,
statistically so. But that's because of the setup in Oklahoma City. He's a very good player.
Right.
And, you know, least we forget, this is a guy who can shoot from the outside, score around the rim. He can rebound. He can block shot. I mean, he's going to, like, re-find himself in Orlando, I think, and potentially earn an All-Star nod. So, if they can keep Ibaka around next year, I mean, sure, why not? I mean, it's not that stupid, but I still think the Thunder won the trade and pretty handily.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it's a clear win for the Thunder. It's like the exact opposite of what the Cleveland Cavaliers used to do, like the first time LeBron James was there. Like, instead of trying to build out and like round out their roster, they would go and like make splashy like Antoine Jameson and Shaq and then Mo Williams and
Larry Hughes.
Yeah, like totally ignore young, good players in the Thunder. Yeah. Like, I'm just so impressed with the way they've continually retooled around Durant and Westbrook. I mean, it sounded, Ken Berger of CBS Sports had a column about why the Thunder did it last night, and obviously he said they ran it by Durant, and he gave his blessing. Like, that was a thing I saw, like, oh, I guess KD's gonna leave now. Like, no, they're not making that trade without clearly running it by KD. It sounds like Ibaka just wants a bigger role on offense and wasn't happy in OKC and was probably going to leave next year anyway. So it's kind of the same logic the Bulls used with trading Derrick Rose. Like, it's a one-year rental, basically. We need to treat it that way. Let's be ahead of the market, get some assets for it that will be here long-term. So props to Presti. I mean, it's like,
did you have to bring that up, Brian?
I'm sorry.
Did you have to bring that up? Like, I don't mind this trip, but that's, I've seen Rose in way too many Photoshop Knicks jerseys lately. It's hurting a little bit.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. But for Orlando, my big concern is that, like, isn't Aaron Gordon best at the four? So why are you trading for a guy who is also going to play the four? Unless you're going to put Ibaka as your small ball five, which,
I
can get behind. I can get behind that, but it seems like you're creating a positional logjam for your best prospect, which is somewhat questionable. And then, I mean, there's the flight risk. Like, that dude, Ibaka, easily could leave. He's going to get maxed out next year. even though the free agent class is a lot stronger next year, the cap's still going to jump again. Like, he's going to get a massive contract.
From Orlando.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean...
I think they're going to max him. I don't think they do this trade without, you know, thinking about it and knowing full well what they're ready to commit to.
Yeah.
And that's a max contract. And here's the thing. Minor hot take, not even a hot take maybe, but Nikola Vucevic is not a Magic player by the end of this summer.
I think that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, there are enough teams. Like, if Dallas strikes out on the free agent market for centers, like if they miss out on Dwight and Horford and Whiteside and all those guys, like they badly need a center. So I could see, you know, a team getting desperate. Hell, the Knicks now don't have a starting center unless you, what's the guy's name?
That's true.
Willie Hernan Gomez is coming over. So I guess he is their starting center right now, but...
It's funny, I was thinking about the Knicks, but here's the thing, they don't really have anything to give up.
Yeah.
Like, okay, they could absorb Vucevic's contract, but they would have to give up like a first-round pick and future considerations.
Right.
I mean, that they are not going to give up any picks in the foreseeable future. I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong. It's the Knicks, but nah, I just don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, so many teams out there could go for him.
It's really odd with Orlando and how they're building their roster because, I mean, you look back a year ago, they had, you know, Vucevic and Oladipo and Gordon and Hezonja and Payton and Tobias Harris at the time. And now you look at their team and, I mean, it is just baffling what they're doing. And I don't know if this is at Frank Vogel's, whether it's his call working with Hennigan or whatnot, but... You know, having Vucevic's contract on the books and essentially having, you know, waste. I mean, Gordon is 20 years old, and now you're moving him around again. They couldn't decide where to put him his first 2 years, and now he's going to go into a third year not knowing what's going on. So it's very, very confusing is what Orlando is doing. But I would agree with Morton, too. I think if they can find a destination for Vucevic, and, I mean, that contract is going to look pretty good for what he provides.
Yep.
You're going to have you're going to have problems on defense, but... He's going to score.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you look at a team like Houston, who's not going to have Dwight Howard there anymore? A team like Portland, who's been rumored looking at centers. So I think there are going to be viable bidders for him. And I think that their pursuit last summer of it was Paul Millsap, I believe.
Yeah.
And they've talked about being interested in Al Horford.
Yep.
Well, I mean, Al Horford and Serge Ibaka together, if they're going to throw the max deal at Al Horford... Well, then you have something. Then you have to deal Vucevic. But I'm just very confused in what Orlando's doing.
Yeah, free agency is going to be really crucial for them to kind of make sense of what their roster, like what their identity, what the hell they're doing. So we'll keep an eye on them in the coming weeks, guys. Let's now actually turn our attention to the draft. Now that we talked about trades that did or did not happen, I mean. The first nine or so picks went about as expected. You knew there was, you know, a class of guys at the top, like Beyond Simmons and Ingram. You knew Bender, Murray, Heald, Dunn, Marquise, Chris, and Jaylen Brown were all going probably within the top eight. You had to figure Jakob Poeltl was somewhere in the 9 to 12 range. He went to Toronto at 9. And then Milwaukee at number 10 took Thon Maker. And everything just went to hell quickly thereafter. So
shit got crazy.
Yeah. So give me your biggest surprises from the night, starting with there, presumably.
Number 13.
Yeah.
Georgios Papagiannis.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not going to lie to you. I know Draft Express has a video on him, but he is someone I didn't look at all. I mean, at all, first or second round. I had no idea, and that's the Sacramento pick that they're getting in the Marquise Chris deal,
right?
So Sacramento, once again, welcome to the show. I have no idea what was going on there. You had guys on the board. I mean, you had Wade Baldwin, who was the only player they reportedly brought in for a workout that was rumored to go in the lottery.
Right,
he was sitting there for you.
Yeah,
so either he looked at Vivek the wrong way when he went into the Sacramento facility and they didn't want to take him anymore, or they're just really confused about how to turn the card in for the player you're selecting. So I had no idea what they were doing there. And that is just stands out to me is, I mean, Thon Maker at 10 is kind of crazy, but when you hear everyone talk about how polarizing he was, some people loved his upside, some people were down on him, that you can at least argue for that one.
Yeah.
But the only one that stood out to me in the first round as being totally off the wall was Papagiannis.
Yeah. What about you, Martin?
Yeah.
I agree entirely. Like, I get the Thon Maker selection to a certain extent just because of the hype alone. There was a couple of rumors leading up to the draft that he was, in fact, somewhere between 21 and 23 years old, instead of the reported 19. But those reports were fairly quickly refuted, I think. That's at least what I saw.
Yeah.
So I think Milwaukee is convinced that he's 19 years old, and when you have that body and that skill set that he does, then I understand the selection, especially due to his intelligence as well. When he was interviewed by The Vertical, and by the way, just an off topic here, the Vertical did a wonderful job covering the draft last night. Like, please, dear ESPN, realize this. You fucking suck, and you need to give the rights up to The Vertical, like, right now. It's so bad. I don't want to see Jalen Rose compare anyone to anyone ever again. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop
yourself. God. Yeah. I was going to throw something at my TV when he compared. Oh God, what was the comparison? I got up and was like, "How can you put this guy on TV and say that he knows what he's talking about?" Him and Wilbon both. The best part for me was him and Wilbon both guessing the picks when they've been announced 10 minutes prior, and Billis is clearly looking at his Twitter account, guessing the picks correctly. That was amazing to me. Because the only guy there that seems to know what's going on, Reese Davis is just steering the ship. But, I mean, Billis at least gives you analysis of the guys, which I think is, I've always loved Jay Billis.
Yeah.
But the other two, just unbelievable.
I'll be honest.
I actually began muting.
Yeah.
And then I just had the Vertical thing going on in the background instead. I thought it was, I'm just going to be real for a minute. I thought it was embarrassing for the worldwide leader to put it up like this. They try to attract the lowest common denominator with all those comparisons and flashy mantras and what. There were no real analysis involved. It was just a couple of guys horsing around for 5 hours. It was embarrassing. It's just an embarrassing display of media. And this is coming from someone who studies media production. So I thought it was like, man, I would actually take last night's ESPN's draft to showcase it as to how to not broadcast anything. My God. Okay, well, back to the picks.
It was Jaylen Brown to Tyreek Evans was the comparison.
Oh, Lord.
And
oh, Lord.
Is, I mean, yeah, it's I not that. Even close. Wow. They don't play the same position.
Yeah. I honestly didn't even have the ESPN broadcast. Like, I muted it immediately before they even took Ben Simmons because I was, you know, the Vertical thing started 30 minutes before the draft, and I was like, oh, wow, this is actually really enlightening, and I figured, you know, Woj would be on top of all the trade rumors, and I just, you know, I knew ESPN was going to be 15 minutes behind anyway, so yeah, I missed all of that, but it sounds like I missed nothing, so that's good to hear. But yeah, let's go back to our beloved Vlade Divac.
Yeah, I mean, all right, Georgios Papagiannis, I had looked at him for a little bit. I thought he was intriguing in terms of his size, and it does seem like he has pretty good mobility for someone that size. He seems like he has a pretty good grasp of the game, but at 13, like, the only way I can sort of allow this is if Sacramento just fell in love with him and knew that the Bulls or Nuggets that were coming up after them had him in mind. Mm-hmm. You could suggest that the Nuggets maybe had some interest because they are always looking abroad.
Right.
So that's like the one area where it makes sense. But if a report comes out over the next couple of days saying that no one works considering Papagiannis until at least 25, maybe even 30, then it's completely incomprehensible why Sacramento did this. Picking someone who's essentially called Papa John's. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I wrote a thing for FanSided about the hardest names to pronounce, so that was the only reason that I actually knew who he was heading into the draft. But, you know, I like a lot of those guys that I included were all, I thought, second-round picks. So it was that was fun to see him go 13th. But, you know, I honestly, like, Chris Towers of CBS Sports, I think, said this last night, and I completely agree. I loved what the Kings did until they started making picks. Like, flipping Marco Bellinelli for 22 was amazing, especially yeah. given the value that dropped on the board at 22. Like, I'm not a huge Malachi Richardson guy, which is who they took. Like, I thought there were other better values there, but at least, you know, Malachi Richardson, you have cost control of 4 years compared to Marco for two, whatever. Like, that's a good deal. 13 and 28, considering the values that fell, considering Scal was on the board at 28, Deonta Davis was on the board at 28, like, Marquise Chris is no sure thing. I mean, hopefully he pans out, but in the snake pit of chaos that is Sacramento, there is no way that dude was going to be good anyway. So, like, props to Vlade for recognizing that and saying, I'm going to, you know, get value out of him. I'm taking the best player available, but I'm going to get value out of him. What baffles me is you already have Boogie, you have Willie Cauley-Stein, and you have Kostakoufos. So why are you taking two more centers? Like, did you guys see Boogie tweeted after they took Mapianis? And he put a little prayer sign and said, like, Lord, give me strength or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, I love that. That is so Boogie. And here's what I really love. People started getting on his ass for having immaturity issues and locker room issues. Like, that tweet was appropriate. Yeah. And I don't care what you say. Like, that's fair. If I'm a star and my team drafts the living hell out of my position, I'm putting that tweet up and I'm in the right there.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's... Look, Vivek Ranadive once suggested that you should play, what was it,
4-on-5
defense, because then you could have someone cherry-picking. Yep. This is his vision, man. He's going to go against the small ball for sure. Like, DeMarcus Cousins for point guard next year.
Dude, I'm worried. That's coming after the Sixers. The Sixers were cornering the market on the all 6'10 lineup, and now the Kings can counter. So I'm a little bummed, but it seems like they are paving the way for a Boogie trade with all this stuff. That would be my read into it. I mean, I have...
Hello, Boston.
Yeah, I have no inside info, but I don't know how you spend, you know, lottery picks on centers in consecutive years. I mean, I think if you flip the picks, if you say they took Scal at 13 and then Papianis at 28, it's like, okay, I can make peace with that. You know, it's a little bit better because, you know, Scal was mostly mocked in that late lottery range anyway. So getting him at 28 redeemed the Papianis pick in some regard. But yeah, like Jeff, as you said, Wade Baldwin's there at 13. You know, you've got Rajon Rondo, who's probably going to bounce. Like, what? Kings.
It made no sense to me. It made absolutely no sense, and I'm not shocked by it because nothing they've done recently has made sense.
Right.
But if you look at their starting lineup, I mean, you've got Collison, McLemore, Gay, Cousins, Cauley-Stein. Like, that's a decent looking starting lineup with a real head coach now. I mean, that's going to, I mean, George Karl, let's be honest, was once he had some pushback from any of the players, he checked out.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that's a decent starting lineup, but to say they were given an opportunity to bring in some young players that contribute right away and they just couldn't do it. And the Kings, God bless the Kings, because they make the Bulls not look as good.
Yeah, Kings gonna Kings.
So I have a question. Was Marquise Chris's Sacramento career more successful than George Karl's?
Yeah, absolutely. He got them Scal. So no matter how that pans out, he got them at least some positive return, which you cannot say about George Karl.
I feel so bad for Tom Siller.
Yeah,
he was so excited when Marquise Chris became a King. He was like, oh, perfect. And the trade was announced like 2 minutes later, and he was like, uh-oh.
Well, because originally Shams reported it as just 13 plus the rights to Bogdan Bogdanovic for 8. And then it was like, oh my God, Kings. you really just did that. But then it came out later. They got number...
Bogdan is good, though. Yeah. Bogdan Bogdanovic is good, though. So that's, like, fair, but the Marquise... Chris just makes sense alongside Boogie,
you're
though,
not
right?
Dropping 5 spots in the draft just for the rights to Bogdan. Like, that's... Exactly. With 28 and the 2020 second round pick, that makes more sense, but...
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got through our ritual Kings bashing. Give me your best picks of the draft. Now we'll start with you, Jeff.
Best pick of the draft. I mean, I love Jamal Murray going 7 to Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the I would say all the picks in the top nine outside of Jaylen Brown made sense.
Yep.
And all play fits to the team. The Timberwolves one, and I talked about this in Dennis Podman a little bit, was it's a little questionable because they have Rubio, and Dunn does fit what Thibodeau wants to do, but positionally they needed shooting.
Right.
And they weren't, and Hield and Murray fell into their laps and would have fit that need really well. It would not have been a reach, so they wouldn't have just been drafting for need. So that was a little interesting to me. But again, Dunn does fit the kind of guard that Thibodeau would prefer, a defensive minded guy. But I like Bryce Johnson going 25 to the Clippers.
Yes.
I think he's going to be able to come in and step in immediately, and I'm surprised he dropped that far. Henry Ellison going 18 to the Pistons.
Yeah.
A lot of value later in the draft. I cannot believe Demetrius Jackson fell 45 to the Celtics.
I know.
I mean, he went to a team that doesn't need him.
Right.
But I would say, Malik Beasley, number 19. I mean, the Nuggets, I really like what the Nuggets did.
Yeah, they cleaned up.
And what they've done the last few years. And getting, we have Murray, Beasley, Gary Harris, and Moutier in the backcourt, and Will Barton in the backcourt now. I mean, you've got great potential there. Hernan Gomez, they've had good success with Nurkic and Jokic as far as the international scouting and the frontcourt players.
Yep.
And you still have Gallinari, Fareed, and Wilson Chandler is veterans there that you can either deal or play. So I like what they're doing. But I think those three picks, if we're talking like, later first round picks, those are three that I really liked.
Yeah.
With Beasley, Ellinson, and Bryce Johnson.
Yeah. What about you, Morton?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat there, especially with Denver. Like, Orlando should take a look at Denver and see how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Orlando is screwing up their rebuild, and Denver is like sneaking on the radar here. They are on their way to being Boston good in terms of gaining assets and knowing how to utilize them. I really, really think they're this sneaky good story that's going to come out of it. But obviously, and Brian, when you asked like one of the best value picks in the later round, I knew what you were going for there, man. You wanted us to mention it. Jeff was just clever enough not to take the bait, but I'm going to do it.
I knew exactly what was going on. And I saw
the
names.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm
you
like,
didn't take
nope.
the bait. Yeah, I'm not going to mention Luau or Korkmaz, but yeah. You know what? I'm going to do it just to not give Brian the satisfaction of going on a 10-minute glowingly review of the draft here.
Yeah, please do.
Luau at 24. That's like 9 spots lower than where he should have been.
Yep.
Furkan Korkmaz, he's not. I don't even know if he's coming over this year or
he's
not.
Not.
I don't think
he
is. No, he's not. And it doesn't even matter because this guy is like an Evan Fournier copy, but with more athleticism. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. And he's got this uncanny way of creating shots in the paint as well. He just needs to get a little bigger and more skill. Not more skill, sorry. More developed in terms of his body.
Yeah.
And Philly, I'm giving them like an A+ for this draft.
Yeah.
They just came through all the way. And now Brian is not allowed to talk about the Sixers for the rest of the podcast.
I'm saying like 2 sentences. I've got a longer thing going up at bballbreakdown.com about what the Sixers did and how going from at the start of the draft, we're about to trade Nerlens, both of those first round picks, and Robert Covington for Chris Dunn, who he's a great player, but questionable fit alongside Ben Simmons, especially if you're going to make Ben Simmons your full-time point guard, to saying no to any of that stuff, keeping, standing pat at 24 and 26, especially when all of these, really good values are falling, and then getting, I think Luau and Korkmaz, they're best player available, but they also filled a huge need. Like, you need wings who can shoot, and like these are both, prototypical 3-and-D guys. Those are what you need around Ben Simmons. It basically seems like the Sixers are legit committed to Ben Simmons as their starting point guard, just at 4, which is awesome.
What's the opposite of the perfect storm? No storm at all?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Okay. But that's it. And, here's the thing. I never thought I'd be saying this. I take my hat off to Brian Colangelo for this one. Here, I do think that he actually took some lessons from Sam Hinkie.
Yeah.
I do think he looked at what Hinkie did saw like what the potential of it and tried to build on it, because you just know that on its own, I don't think you would have gone that route.
Right. It seemed like so pro, like it was like a targeted thing for the process supporters. Like all of us on Twitter, when we go on the board at 24 and Luau was still there, like go check Sixers Twitter's timeline from then. And everyone is saying, take Luau, take Luau. And then they did. And we were like, what?
That's amazing.
You just saw so many weird picks in the teens. You're like, oh, they're going to take, like, you know, some Russian dude we've never heard of. Like, some, you know, just overdraft the hell. And no, they nailed it. So I was very happy about that. But,
or Caris LeVert.
Yeah. Oh, I like him.
Oh, but wait a second. He wasn't there, was he?
No, he went.
Because the Nets decided they wanted to spend the 20th pick on a guy who may crack 50 games a season. Possibly,
you know. Look, I like him. I mean, if he's healthy, it's a gamble. But like the Nets have no talent, so you could question whether trading Thaddeus Young to get that pick and then spending it on a high risk player is worth it. But you know, I mean, I don't totally hate it.
I love him as a player when healthy, but man, that's a huge gamble for a team that was sorely lacking of young players and like getting on and rebuild this. If he is damaged for a long while and is one of those guys that are continuously limited to 50 games this season, 40 the next, maybe have one where he breaks 65, then I probably would have gone in a different direction. I do think that had he been on the board, he was paid one before, I think they would have gone Malik Beasley.
Could you
guys have seen Malik Beasley just tearing it up in Brooklyn because there was no one else around?
Yeah.
He would have averaged like 21 in the first season.
Well, that's Isaiah Whitehead, who they took in the second round, is going to be that same way. Like that dude's going to going to go off for 20 points as a rookie. He's going to be fantastic. I can't believe neither one of you guys mentioned DeJounte Murray for the Spurs. Like how the hell every year it happens. Every single freaking
year. Because it's a given, man.
Yeah, like there's one prospect who falls way further than he should, and he always ends up on the Spurs. And, like, that dude's going to be awesome. You know he's going to learn to shoot, Skip, whatever his last name, Engeland or whatever his last name is, their legendary shooting coach who, like, taught Kawhi how to shoot. I mean, going to work with Murray now. Murray's going to be their, like, Tony Parker replacement long term. He's going to be amazing. That one was a huge steal for me. We mentioned Deonta Davis earlier, who went to the Grizzlies. You know, that's awesome. Awesome depth behind Gasol and Zebo. And
Wade Baldwin and Deonta Davis in this draft from Memphis. That's huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's so huge.
Yeah.
I love what they did on draft night. Of course, they lucked into it somewhat.
Right.
I mean, Wade Baldwin shouldn't have been there at 17, and Deonta Davis definitely shouldn't have been there at 31.
Yeah.
But they traded for him, I believe, and I mean, hats off to the Grizz, man.
Yeah.
They saw what was unfolding and decided, you know, we're gonna get this guy.
Yeah.
I love it, love it.
I liked what the Grizz did, but not as much as I could have. I they needed shooting, and Baldwin's a decent shooter, but I mean, with Malik Beasley sitting there, I would have much rather, you know, got him. But I understand Baldwin because if Conley's not coming back,
right,
they needed someone to step in. The Deonta Davis is great value.
Yeah.
And they're going to need people to fill in, you know, once Randolph and Gasol. I mean, Randolph's going to be 35. So I like that pick. And then on the Nets, I love this right here. They have seven guys, if you count LeVert, under contract for next year.
Oh, my gosh.
And only three of them are under 25.
Oh, boy.
And that's Chris McCullough, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Caris LeVert. So no one exactly that you would count on as being a franchise builder. And then on the Spurs, I mean, when the board was falling the way it was, I'm Jonte Murray's going to be interesting because he does make a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a young player. And it's going to be interesting to see how Pop brings him along because he's not necessarily the most patient with young players. I thought that Tyler Ulis or Demetrius Jackson there would have been just the perfect fits as far as guys that have led a team for a successful team for a number of years and fallen right into, you know, the Spurs and what they do. But that hasn't been the MO of the Spurs. They draft, and they don't have a rhyme or reason to what they draft. They'll draft international guys. They're just good at what they do. So like you guys are saying, I mean, I would not be a bit surprised if Murray is, you know, the future point guard and replacement for Parker.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I saw him mocked as high as like 10 to the Bucks. So I think that's just, at that point, it's just best player available, depending on how you feel about Deonta Davis. The other two that I really loved, Patrick McCaw to the Warriors. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, a lot of their bench is about to become a free agent, so they really just need to tear up the whole damn thing, basically. But they get Damian Jones, the center from Vanderbilt, who you figure is going to replace Festus. And then McCaw, I think Leandro Barbosa is a free agent, so McCaw just slides in right there. Like, the Bucks sold them that pick. Like, it wasn't even their pick. They just took $2.4 million. That is blood money, Bucks. You sealed another title for Golden State in the next 3 years, because McCaw is going to be that kind of impact player off the bench. And aside from that, I love Demetrius Jackson at 45. I don't care that Boston has 7,000 point guards. That was just too good of a value to... And then
that's where, as a Bulls fan, I'm pissed, Brian.
Yeah, I saw you were going for 48.
Here's the thing: the Bulls had 48th, right? Yep. If they could have bought the pick that Golden State bought for $2.4 million and gotten Demetrius Jackson, who's a Notre Dame guy, which we know Paxson likes,
right?
Then we wouldn't have taken a guy who has an extra goddamn bone in his foot and needs to have Adidas make him a special suit to not remove the pain, but lessen the pain. But no, that's not an issue.
I'm telling you, I'm an Illinois grad, and I follow Illinois basketball the most, but I've been a Notre Dame fan since I was born. So I've watched most of Demetrius Jackson's career in great detail and just love him as a player. And yeah, I try and remove my personal bias for the teams I root for out of it. But I was doing Dennis Podman while the second round was progressing. And at one point, I think I got distracted. And there's a point where I don't talk for like 5 minutes because I'm looking at the board hoping Demetrius Jackson falls. And I that would have made so much sense for the Bulls to do. And I mean, you had his backcourt mate, Jerry and Grant, already on board. They worked so well together at Notre Dame when they were there. I mean, you've got a young, viable backcourt then. But alas, we have Ball Zipser.
Yeah, yeah. It happens. I mean, I would...
And Jose Calderon.
Don't even mention him. I don't want to bring that sad time up. I mean, I'm with you guys in terms of wanting to move up in the second round or buy a second round pick. Like, Brian Colangelo... As much as I loved what he did last night, he was meeting with reporters while the second round was going on. And I'm seeing Demetrius Jackson falling, and I'm seeing the complete lack of point guards on the roster. And I'm like, dude, like, go back to the war room. Like, you could have this press conference after number 60. Go buy a damn pick and get Demetrius. Like, buy it from a team in the late 30s, early 40s. Because that was just an insane value to drop. And then my last guy... Kay Felder going to Cleveland. Like, I know he's really small, but
I wanted that guy too, man. Why the heck? That this is just I am. Look, here's the thing. Just before I go on a major rant, because it's not really worth it in the second round. I like Denzel Valentine at 14th. That's the most important thing. Yeah. So I'm satisfied overall with this draft. Just because of Denzel Valentine. But that second round, man, the Bulls just messed up. There were guys there that were ready to play. Mm-hmm. Kay Felder ended up on the now defending champions. Like, he was right there. This was the leading assist guy, one of the best scorers in the nation. He can get to the line. He's strong as a bull. No pun intended. He can shoot. Man, I don't get this. Yep. And then, like, the $2.4 million that could have been spent on moving up to get Demetrius Jackson instead, and you go for Paul Zipser. That's what you go for. That's just, come on now.
When the second round started, there was, a ton of guys that I thought would have been viable options and would have made sense in the first round that were still there and were worth, you know, spending a first or at least trying to buy a second round pick.
Yeah.
Diallo and Ulis and Brogdon, Diamond Stone, Steven Zimmerman, Demetrius Jackson, Ben Bentel, Kay Felder. Those are just some of the ones I pinpointed. And it's a very interesting, it's a bigger conversation in that you see a lot of these successful college players get moving farther down the board than you thought they were going to go, and more international players getting intertwined, and this has been a long-running trend. But I'm wondering if the expansion of the D-League and the ability for every team eventually to have their own minor league team and bring these guys along slowly and getting international guys over here and with their own basketball development people is becoming increasingly important. And bringing the college players in is becoming increasingly not. They're really more teams are willing to take those risks, and once they get these very raw but good basketball players in here with their own basketball development people, I just wonder if that's going to be a trend that we continue to see. Because right there, there's a ton of guys I could see actually getting minutes for the Bulls next year.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at it through my Bulls lens, but for most teams,
for sure.
I mean, there's a chance that there's a ton of second round picks that are on or getting minutes for NBA teams next year.
Yeah, I think this draft was weird because so many teams had three or more first round picks. Like Boston had three, Philly had three, Denver had three, Phoenix had three before they traded. So like you almost had to draft a couple draft and stash guys in the first round, like perhaps more so than usual. You know, Boston probably took two, Philly took one. Denver probably took one. I don't know if Hernan Gomez is coming over right away. So I think that contributed in part to it. But yeah, it set a record, right? Like the most international prospects drafted in the first round last night. I think it was 14. So it's a good point. I mean, like if you're a high school prospect, like you're almost better off going overseas at this point because you don't want to go to college and get your flaws exposed as it seems. But so we talked a lot here about best picks. Let's go to the worst picks. We've already mentioned Papagiannis. Morton, you had some beef with LeVert at 20. Anyone?
No, well, yeah, that's it's not LeVert. It's just the injuries.
Yeah. Right. That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a risk that didn't necessarily need to be taken at 20. We can put it that way.
Makes
but
sense.
Any other picks stand out as really bad ones to you?
None that jump off the screen. I mean, I thought a lot of it made sense. As weird as we thought some of it was, I thought a lot of it made sense. There was really nothing that jumped out at me as too crazy. I think I'm still baffled by the Jaylen Brown pick at three. And not because I don't like Jaylen Brown as a player. I mean, I had him number seven.
Yeah. But
I don't understand what they're trying to do because it doesn't make sense if you're trying to trade for Butler. It doesn't make sense on your roster. It doesn't make sense in a lot of regards. But other than that, I mean, I thought there was a lot of, for as crazy as we said it was, there's a lot of stuff that made sense last night. I mean, I love Heald to the Pelicans. I love him playing with Anthony Davis. That's going to be great. I like the fact that the Raptors took Poeltl because it means they're not going to throw $18 million a year at Biombo.
Right.
And you still don't know what Valanciunas is. I love the Hawks getting both Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry to play on the wings because they're trying to get that. It was really that missing Damari Carroll last year seemed to hurt them, even though Bazemore stepped in and played pretty well. You've got Korver and Cephalosha that are over 30 now, and you bring in two players that are athletic on the wings and can do a good job there if they bring back Horford. So there's a lot of stuff that made sense last night.
Martin, anyone,
I think Malachi Richardson at 22 was kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
I don't like his efficiency. I like his build, but I question whether he can get... I mean, if he was inefficient in college, I question whether he can get the shot off and improve it in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, outside of that, it's not like I would have taken him like in the late second. I probably would have gone with him in the early second, so it's not too far of a jump. Gershon Yabusele, number 16.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I get the pick. I get it, but I do think that Boston reached for him
yeah.
at 16. Mm-hmm. But it could be a similar situation as the Kings if they knew that someone was interested in him, like at 17, 18, or 19, that they thought, okay, then we have to take him now because that's just the name of the game. But, I mean, could you imagine, like, Henry Ellison in Boston?
I know, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of these picks make sense, but especially like the international guys in the teens, you let a lot of value fall to the 20s unexpectedly because you reached on some of these guys, like Yabusele, mm-hmm. like Papianis. I don't know that much about Hernan Gomez, and I trust the Denver scouting more than I do the Kings, so I'm not going to crush them for that. But, like, yeah, exactly. Henry Ellenson would have been, like, Boston doesn't have a front court right now. Why not bring mm-hmm. in a guy who is going to contribute right away?
It yeah. seems like they just said, okay, wow, we have 20 guys on the roster. Let's start taking international guys to stash them over there.
Right.
We can't have any more guys. And this goes back to the point of, why did Danny Ainge need to win the trade?
Yeah, right.
You had right. the ability to fortify your roster around Jimmy Butler once you trade some guys away. There was, like Morty mentioned, Ellenson there would have been great in Boston.
Yeah.
There was a ton of guys in the front court. I mean, Bryce Johnson in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Developing yeah. scale in Boston. It just, there's front court guys there. Diallo. I mean, there's a ton of front court guys there that could have made sense. It just, Boston, it seems like we're beating a dead horse, but I just, their overall night was the only one, because as I think we mentioned, the Kings did at least something that was redeeming and getting a 22nd pick for Bellinelli, but and they at least picked two guys with decent upside and more to mention. I didn't like Malachi Richardson's efficiency either, mm-hmm. but I'm curious to see if that was more about the Syracuse team he played on than him as a player.
Yeah,
but at least they got guys in Richardson and Scale that could have been lottery picks. And the Boston is really the only one that I sit there and go, wow, I have no idea what their plan is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So before we wrap up here, let's give some team-wide biggest winners and losers. We've talked about really loving what Philly did, what Memphis did.
I believe you talked about liking what Philly
Morton,
did.
Morton brought it up first.
I know. only because he didn't want you to bring it up.
Yeah, to preemptively.
He's being nice.
Yeah. So with those two, we like Denver a lot. Anyone else stand out as a winner from last night?
Obviously, I think it's Philly, yeah, but, like, yeah, clap. You're so proud right now. I'm actually going to say Minnesota.
Okay.
Chris Dunn's falling to 5.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. So I really like that for them, and I think this opens up the possibility of trading Ricky Rubio. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people like Ricky. I do, too, but I do think in this new league where shooting is crucial, you need to consider who you're putting out there at point guard.
For sure.
And if you want to maximize the effort of Towns and especially the development of Wiggins, you need to have guys who can drain the long ball. Chris Dunn at least projects to being a more capable shooter. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he is also a defensive-minded point guard and he's athletic, I think he could be an all-star. So I really like that at 5 for Minnesota. Losers. Let's just take it right off the bat. We talked about Boston.
Yep.
That's like the biggest loser of the night. Even though I really dig what they did in the second round, you just mm-hmm. that first round went to hell, and they just limit themselves to like future trades. They can't pick up the Boston or the Jimmy Butler talks now. They just can't. It's bye bye Jimmy Butler by choosing the players that they did. I think Sacramento should be on not necessarily the losing list, but in the bottom tier of the well-received list.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, Denver should be counted among the winners. Memphis, as we talked about, Wade Baldwin, like Deonta Davis, I like that. Jeff, you mentioned the Hawks. I like that a lot. I didn't even think about it, really. That's actually a pretty good point because Korver is like older than dirt now. And Sabo Sefolosha is getting his legs broken by the New York Police Department, which means that you don't really know how long he's...
I tell you, one team I actually really like that may be a little outside the box is Phoenix.
Yeah, yep.
Good one.
I mean, I think they're putting together a decent squad. If you look at their roster as a whole, and the two guys they picked last night, they had no front court depth behind Chandler and Len.
Yeah.
And they go out there and they pick. I mean, I think I described it as them swinging for the fences, so to speak, with Bender and Chris, because you have two, you know, high risk, high reward guys, but you see the potential right there. So you have a front line right now of Len, Chris, and Bender for the future, and that's pretty impressive. And you couple that with, you know, a pair of young guards and Bledsoe and Knight. I'm sorry, a trio of young guards of Bledsoe, Knight, and Booker. Yep. And then whatever you get out of TJ Warren on the wing, that's a decent little squad right there. And at least you have some sense of what they're doing. And then they let the bar. They took a gamble, a calculated risk, by dealing back into the top 10 and not sacrificing that much to do it.
Yeah.
I think if they would have given up Knight or Bledsoe to do it, I would have looked at it a little differently. But they have three really good guards. They have a fortified front court. And they have money to. I believe they have money to spend. If I'm correct.
Yeah.
They have over $30 million to spend. So yeah. I like what Phoenix is doing.
Yeah, and they got Ulis in the early second round too at 34, which is
I didn't even mention
all
that.
Kentucky.
Yeah. Yes.
All Kentucky.
Yeah. So that was
seriously, like Brandon Knight, Booker, Knight, Eric Bledsoe. Bledsoe.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was Phoenix definitely came out.
Archie Goodwin.
Oh yeah,
that's five Kentucky guys.
Archie Goodwin too. That's right.
Coach Cal's definitely taken over there. He just
Earl Watson is holding a spot.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And I completely forgot Earl Watson was the head coach until they flashed it last night. I'm like, wait, Earl Watson got hired? Yeah. I totally missed that.
Yep. Yeah. The only other team that stood out to me in a good way was Golden State, just because I was such a Patrick McCaw fan, and getting him at 38 and Jones at 30. I mean. Those are two productive. They're probably not going to be starters anytime soon, but like two productive rotation members for a near NBA champion at 30 and 38. It's like worth its weight in gold. So, and they signed McCaw already, I believe, to a two-year fully guaranteed deal. So like, there's not going to be a KJ McDaniel situation where he holds out and does the 1-year deal and becomes a restricted free agent. They've got him locked up at least for the next 2 years. So, props to them.
They just need Draymond to light a fire under Damian Jones. Because just Damian Jones has all the ability in the world. But every time he turned on a Vanderbilt game, he just was like, it seemed like he wanted to be somewhere else.
Trey's just gonna kick him in the nuts a few times. That'll get him going.
There you go. That's a perfect combination.
We forgot a team though.
Who is that?
In terms of winners, because the Bulls. Have to look at the whole picture. The Thunder.
Yep.
They're up there. They got Sabonis and Victor Oladipo. Man, Sabonis is one. It was one tough son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's smart. And he look. This is a guy who has a wingspan that's lesser than Wade Baldwin's, and he's averaging 12 rebounds a game. That's hard and hustle. It's the kind of motor that they need in Oklahoma City. He can shoot it a little bit. He's got excellent court vision. Combine that with the fact that Victor Oladipo is now going to be on the wing instead of Deion freaking Waiters.
Yeah.
And I say that the Oklahoma City Thunder are looking damn good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is very true.
And
yep.
You know, we keep mentioning winners, but a simple one is the Lakers.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
oh yeah,
they just they all they had was take Brandon Ingram, and they did.
Yep.
And now they have D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, and about $60 million. So
yeah, well, they also got Ivaka Zubac. That's also a good pick at 32. Yeah. I like him a lot. He's one of those players who can fit into the new league. So and he's a big wide body. I really enjoy their draft, but you know what? You're actually hitting on a good point here. Just making the obvious selections is actually a win in itself. Like, we've seen teams in the past not do that, and they've crumbled because of it. Like, had LeBron not signed with Cleveland back in 2014, then what would the Cavs have done with Anthony Bennett? Like, kept trying to develop him? Yeah. Like, they should just have gone Noel and then be done with it, because he was the one projected to go number one at the time, so... Man, yeah, I agree with the Lakers. They may not win.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, I mean, you said it well, Morton. There is value in just taking the best prospect available and not factoring in fit, which it seemed like the Sixers and Lakers did, and then the Celtics kind of went haywire. So Sorry to all the Celtics fans out there. If James, if you're listening, it's okay, buddy. Don't jump. We're here for you.
Oh, he wants to come on a podcast soon, so we should invite him. This is like a public invitation to James to come on and talk about Boston.
Yeah, just rant for like a full hour. He could just read his Gingerbread House story.
Yeah, that would be perfect. By the way, before we leave, I have one question to both of you. Buddy Hield in New Orleans. Yeah. Like you guys touched on it briefly, that's an excellent selection. I agree as well. Like, how dynamic could he be alongside Anthony Davis? That inside-outside combination. I have a feeling Hield is going to be one of those players who routinely knocks down 200 threes a year on high percentages. And with Davis there, it gives him more space and it gives him an option to play off of. And the fact that he's an improved ball handler, I think they could mix up some pick and rolls as well. I really, really dig that selection.
Yeah,
for New Orleans.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. I would have liked Jamal Murray there too, but I think Hield's even the better fit in some regards.
I think getting a true shooting guard, because they with Holiday and Evans there, I think that's going to be a good fit. And I think, you know, Hield is like Mort said, I think he's gonna be the guy to get every kick out from Anthony Davis and put it up, as long as Tyreek isn't, you know, taking the ball away from him. And you know, it just, New Orleans has a lot of questions on their roster, but at least they know they have Anthony Davis and Buddy Hield, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up, guys. So this was awesome. This was really fun. Jeff, thanks for coming on again. It's always fun to have you
thanks
on.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. We'll bring you back at some point when the Bulls inevitably sign Kirk Heinrich to a 3-year, $30 million deal.
Oh. Too soon? Mark Karnsoulis would be happy, though.
Oh, yeah. He would be thrilled.
He would be thrilled.
Hashtag Bulls support group.
Yeah.
We need the support group. Derrick Rose was out with Joakim Noah in New York last night, by the way.
There's pictures
online right now of him. So him partying with Noah last night in New York. So, you know, hey, you guys want to go to New York? That's fine. Enjoy. See ya.
Reunited and it feels so good. That's gonna be awesome for Joe, man.
Bulls East.
Bulls East. And Brian, I hope I didn't get you into too much trouble last night putting the Derrick Rose in a Bulls jersey or Knicks jersey on your Facebook wall. I know your wife is a huge Rose fan. I hope you didn't break things in your house.
No, I was going to bring her on today, but she is now sworn a blood feud against you. So she will not be making an appearance on this podcast. No, hopefully my wife is a big Bulls fan. We're going to try to get her on in the next couple of weeks to talk about the D-Rose thing. But until then, this was the NBA podcast. Check out bballbreakdown.com for a bunch of draft recap stuff. We're going to have a lot of good off-season content as well. Once free agency ramps up, we're doing a 5-question series, kind of previewing the biggest issues every team faces heading into the offseason. You could check Jeff out at Twitter at JFEY5. Check us out at the NBA Pod on Twitter. You can find us on SoundCloud, find us on iTunes. Please leave us reviews. Until then, guys, it's been real.